KPXU is joined by Osco Drug, America's drugstore, in saluting the national champs, the Dixie Rebels. Coach Neil Roberts has headed this championship team. In 8 years with Dixie College, the Rebels have gone to postseason play each year, plus 3 appearances in the national tournament, a 6th-place finish, a 3rd-place finish, and now the championship. Region 18 Coach of the Year and National Coach of the Year. KPXU and Osco Drug salutes Coach Neil Roberts and the rest of the champion Dixie College Rebels. KDXU is joined by R&K Bookstore in saluting the national champs, the Dixie Rebels. A key part of this title team is Abraham Parrish, who so perfectly brought together physical ability with constant hard work that he was named the most valuable player of the tournament and also a member of the all-tournament team. Abraham Parrish, outstanding leader. KDXU and R&K Bookstore salute Abraham Parrish and the rest of the champion Rebels. KDXU is joined by Bateman Pharmacy in saluting the national champs, the Dixie Rebels. A key part of this title team is starting forward Dan Bell, who through his constant work ethic provided leadership on and off the floor for the Rebels. An outstanding percentage shooter, one of the best clutch free throw shooters on the team, an outstanding rebounder and defender. KDXU and Bateman Pharmacy salute Dan Bell and the rest of the champion Dixie College Rebels. KDXU is joined by Evans Hairstyling and Total Exposure Tanning Beds in saluting the national champs, the Dixie Rebels. A key part of this title team is Steve Schreiner, who provided outstanding offense, defense, and rebounding ability off the bench. The youngest player on the team, Steve Schreiner marked himself as a future major college star and a key member of this championship squad. KDXU and Evans Hairstyling and Total Exposure Tanning Bed salute Steve Schreiner and the rest of the champion Rebels. KDXU is joined by Dixo Gas in saluting the national champs, the Dixie Rebels. A key part of this title team is an unsung hero, Dr. Bruce Williams, who served the dual role of team physician and super fan. Dr. Williams was there at every Dixie College game to help mend the physical hurts, to serve as personal counselor, and also as super cheerleader. KDXU and Dixo Gas salute Dr. Bruce Williams and the rest of the champion Dixie College Rebels. KDXU is joined by the Levitt Group in saluting the national champs, the Dixie Rebels. A key part of this title team is Josh Bergen, who has provided outstanding rebounding ability off the bench. Bergen, in a reserve forward role all year, also has provided offensive punch and outstanding defensive ability. Josh Bergen, who overcame a back injury to star at Dixie. KDXU and the Levitt Group salute Josh Bergen and the rest of the champion Dixie College Rebels. KDXU is joined by Jones Paint and Glass in saluting the national champs, the Dixie Rebels. A key part of this title team is Robert Maxwell, who is a son of a coach, one of the steadiest players on the floor, an outstanding defender, the best free throw percentage shooter, one of the best field goal percentage shooters, and an outstanding assist man. What else could be said about Robert Maxwell? KDXU and Jones Paint and Glass salute Robert Maxwell and the rest of the champion Dixie College Rebels. KDXU is joined by Washington Savings Bank in saluting the national champs, the Dixie Rebels. A key part of this title team is Darren Williams, who as a presidential scholar is an outstanding student, in addition to being an outstanding basketball player. Lovingly called Ox by his teammates, he has proven that this is indeed the year of the Ox. Darren Williams, outstanding rebounder, hard-working ball player. KDXU and Washington Savings Bank salute Darren Williams and the rest of the champion Rebels. KDXU is joined by Casa del Sol Travel in saluting the national champs, the Dixie Rebels. A key part of this title team is assistant coach Tom Dabrowski, who is a former architect, retired, and then came out of retirement to assist in the basketball program. A gentleman in the truest sense of the word, Tom Dabrowski has become the winningest assistant coach in junior college history. KDXU and Casa del Sol Travel salute Tom Dabrowski and the rest of the champion Dixie College Rebels. KDXU is joined by Tri-State Office Supply and saluting the national champs, the Dixie Rebels. A key part of this title team is Jay Clark, who starred for 2 years as a reserve guard with Dixie. Lovingly called Radar for his outstanding shooting ability, this year Jay developed as a defensive player and as a ball handler, becoming the only Rebel to finish the season with more defensive steals than personal fouls. KDXU and Tri-State Office salute Jay Clark and the rest of the champion Dixie College Rebels. KDXU is joined by Sunset Flooring in saluting the national champs, the Dixie Rebels. A key part of this title team is Brent Stevenson, who after serving an LDS church mission in Brazil, discovered that he still had basketball talent and was 3 inches taller. Brent Stevenson, outstanding scorer, finishing number 10 on the all-time list of Dixie point producers, outstanding rebounder, and a great prospect. KDXU and Sunset Flooring salute Brent Stevenson and the rest of the champion Rebels. KDXU is joined by Jolly's Ranchwear in saluting the national champs, the Dixie Rebels. A key part of this title team is co-captain Brent Stevenson, who not only is an outstanding athlete, but is an outstanding student, straight-A student. Brent Stevenson earned all tournament honors in the national championship get-together in Hutchinson, Kansas. KDXU and Jolly's Ranchwear salute Brent Stevenson and the rest of the champion Dixie College Rebels. KDXU is joined by Carton Shoes in saluting the national champs, the Dixie Rebels. A key part of this title team is co-captain Avrian Parrish, who broke the career and season scoring records at Dixie College. But Ave is more than that. He's a team leader who also led the team in assists and was among the leading rebounders and an outstanding defender. KDXU and Carton Shoes salute Avrian Parrish and the rest of the champion Dixie College Rebels. KDXU is joined by Harmon's Dixie in saluting the national champs, the Dixie Rebels, led by head coach Neil Roberts, who won the NJCAA Coach of the Year honors. Roberts was an outstanding player at BYU, then an outstanding coach in high school before joining Dixie 8 seasons ago. 3 national tournament teams and 1 national title chalked up to coach Neil Roberts. KDXU and Harmon's Dixie salute Neil Roberts and the rest of the champion Dixie College Rebels. KDXU is joined by the St. George Federal Credit Union in saluting the national champs, the Dixie Rebels. A key part of this title team is Lyndon DeYoung, who began his basketball career at Skyline High School in Salt Lake City. After a brief stint at Fresno State, Lyndon transferred to Dixie College and as a reserve center helped key the Dixie rebounding and shot blocking effort. KDXU and the St. George Federal Credit Union salute Lyndon DeYoung and the rest of the champion Dixie College Rebels. KDXU is joined by Outdoor Outlet in saluting the national champs, the Dixie Rebels. A key part of this title team is Brent Waite, who just happens to work for Outdoor Outlet. Brent won the Cheshire Sportsmanship Award in the 1982 tournament. Then, after an LDS church mission, returned with his defensive ability, passing ability, and shooting ability intact to lead Dixie to the national championship. KDXU and Outdoor Outlet salute Brent Waite and the rest of the champion Dixie College Rebels. KDXU is joined by Southern Utah Screen Printing in saluting the national champs, the Dixie Rebels. A key part of this title team is Robert Maxwell, who starred for Dixie before going on an LDS church mission. Maxwell came back to win the Cheshire Award at the National Junior College Athletic Association Championships, honoring his sportsmanship and honoring the national champ Dixie Rebels. KDXU and Southern Utah Screen Printing salute Robert Maxwell and the rest of the champion Rebels. KDXU is joined by Jeremiah's Gifts and Things in saluting the national champs, the Dixie Rebels. A key part of this title team is guard Ricky Henry, who with his quick defensive hands and outstanding leaping ability helped lead Dixie to the title. Ricky Henry, one of the best jumpers in the history of Dixie College and one of the top 20 scorers in the history of this school. KDXU and Jeremiah's Gifts and Things salute Ricky Henry and the rest of the champion Dixie College Rebels. KTXU is joined by Dixie Auto Parts in saluting the national champs, the Dixie Rebels. A key part of this title team is favorite son, Rob Gentry, who started Dixie High School before joining Dixie College. Gentry is one of only three Dixie players ever to play in two national championship tournaments. And Rob Gentry, outstanding guard and sometimes forward with Dixie, proved to be a key reserve. KTXU and Dixie Auto Parts salute Rob Gentry and the rest of the champion Rebels.
Tanks, what's a bronco busting cowboy like you eating frozen yogurt? That's dude food.
Not dude food, it's good food. Now have a taste. Wrap your tongue around that passionate strawberry and peach swirl and tell me you wouldn't trade your prize saddle to hang around the Dixie Frozen Yogurt store. They got 40 scrump delicious flavors.
Shoot, sounds too fattening for a big-time cowboy like me.
Nope, you can save your horse. Less than half the calories of most frozen desserts and twice as good for you.
That there yogurt is good enough even for my horse, Star. Tex, you sure can pick your horses, women, and frozen yogurt. Where is this Dixie Frozen Yogurt store?
Right at the St. George Commercial Center, right next to Radio Shack. So ride on over and get yourself a dessert with no guilt because it's 98% fat-free. And don't forget, Thursday is when Dixie Frozen Yogurt serves tofutti, Western style. Dixie Frozen Yogurt, you'll love it.
I told my dad I was going to treat him to a super lunch at Casa Bonita. He asked me if I had enough money, and I said, sure. Casa Bonita has a luncheon special every day that anybody can afford. I said I had 49 cents so we could eat like kings. That's when it started acting funny. He had tears in his eyes, and he was laughing at the same time. He gave me a hug and said he'd give me a loan if we needed it. It'll be fun.
Dixie College will play for the National Junior College Athletic Association Basketball Championship Saturday night when they take on Kankakee College of Illinois. The Rebels Friday night won in the semifinal against the tough Midland Chaparral team from Texas as Dixie scored the first 6 points, never trailed in the game, and let the defense do the talking. Dixie finally beat Midland 72-57. In the other semifinal, Kankakee College had a knockdown, dragout, shooting war and defensive war with Moberly as Kankakee hung on for a 77-72 upset victory over the team from Missouri. In the consolation bracket games, Kaskaskia of Illinois eliminated Shelby State 94-76. Casper was eliminated by West Ark of Arkansas 49-65. And in the championship consolation, Allegheny College of Maryland downed Erie 77-72. Tomorrow, Kaskaskia will take on West Ark for consolation and seventh place. Allegheny will take on Highland Park, going for fifth place in the tournament. Moberly will meet Midland for third place, and Dixie will take on Kankakee for the national championship. Final scores again in the semifinals, Kankakee 77, Moberly 72, and Dixie over Midland 72-57. Larry Jewell reporting from Hutchinson, Kansas. Avery and Parrish received a pass from Brent Stevenson and then promptly hit a jump shot from 5 feet out with 30 seconds left in the ball game Saturday night to break a 55-55 tie and lead Dixie to the national championship of junior college basketball in Hutchinson, Kansas. The final score, 57 for Dixie, 55 for Kankakee of Illinois. A tight ball game throughout. Neither team able to get more than a 5-point lead in the game. Dixie led by a scant 1 point, 31-30 at the end of the first half, and finally prevailed 57-55 to win the first ever national championship for Dixie, finishing the season at 35-1 with 23 consecutive wins. In the honors, Neil Roberts won Coach of the Year honors. Robert Maxwell won the Cheshire Trophy as the sportsmanship, the best sportsmanship of the tournament. Avery and Parrish named Most Valuable Player and a member of the All-Tournament Team, along with Brent Stevenson. Stevenson and Parrish on the All-Tournament Team, Parrish the Most Valuable Player. For third place in the tournament, Moberly edged by Midland 67-58. In the fifth place game, Allegheny of Maryland down Highland Park 99-65. And for seventh place in the NJCAA 38th Annual Championship Tournament, Kaskaskia of Illinois down West Arc of Arkansas 70-57. But for St. George fans, everyone will remember Dixie College 1985 National Junior College Basketball Championship as they down Kankakee College of Illinois 57-55. Larry Jewell reporting from Hutchinson, Kansas. He ran off 10 unanswered points early in the first half, going from an 8-4 deficit to a 14-8 lead. And at that point, never relinquished the lead, as Dixie went on to a 113-85 victory over Hickam Air Force Base Monday night in Hawaii, the first ever game played by Dixie College on the islands. Dixie was led in scoring by Brent Stevenson, who matched a career-high 28 points. Abraham Parrish added 22, and Ricky Henry had a season-high 20 points to lead the Rebels, while Deverett Ross kept a scrappy Hickam Air Force Base squad close to Dixie and charging against Dixie with 30 points. Dixie now will play a group of Marines at BYU Hawaii Tuesday afternoon, 6:45 broadcast time in St. George. Final score Monday night, again, from Hawaii, Hickam Air Force Base, Dixie College wins number 11, 113 to Hickam Air Force Base 85. Larry Jewell reporting. Abraham Perry scored 28 points and Brent Stevenson added 17 to lead the Dixie College Rebels to a 96-73 victory over the Hawaii Marines Tuesday afternoon at the BYU Hawaii campus in Laie'e. This was the second game of the two-game set in the islands for the Dixie College Rebels. And the victory extended the Dixie College winning streak to 12. The Rebels broke open the game midway through the first half with full court scrapping pressure on the defense that caused a turnover after turnover by the Marines. At that point, Dixie took a 55-29 halftime lead, then expanded it midway through the second half before the Marines just held on for the 96-73 thumping. Dixie, once again with a victory in Hawaii. 96 for Dixie, the Hawaii Marines 73. Larry Jewell reporting.
Here we are back on St. George Boulevard asking people why the Minute Markets are their favorite places to shop.
Well, I'll tell you, the reason I shop at the Minute Markets is because they're so handy. There's one on the east and the west side of town.
Sir? Why is it that you like to shop at the Minute Markets?
Because no matter when I go there, they're always so clean and fresh looking. They always go the extra mile to keep the public happy.
Now, strictly off the record, the reason I like the Minute Markets is their huge 32-ounce drink for only 39 cents. It's got to be the best buy in town anywhere. Here comes a little girl. Let's see if we can get her to tell us why she likes the Minute Markets. Hey, little girl. Why do you like the Minute Markets?
Because my daddy owns them. In fact, he has two in St. George, one in Hurricane, and one in Cedar City.
Everyone likes the Minute Markets.
Hello again, everyone. Howard Cosell speaking of sports. There seems to be a big furor among certain sports writers around the country because NBC cut away at 7 o'clock to a show called Silver Spoons after forsaking its nightly news, staying with the Bob Hope Desert Classic as long as possible, but unable, under the strictures of broadcast, to continue with the sudden death play. Oh, it's a terrible thing NBC did, isn't it? What nonsense. It's time, once and for all, to tell the truth about the freeloaders of the world who are sports writers. NBC gave up between $500,000 and $1 million by giving up its nightly news. And had they given up Silver Spoons, heaven knows what the toll would have been. But no, instead, they're villains. What sports writer paid to cover that tournament? Stop the nonsense, gentlemen. You covered it for free, and you could have gone on forever and still filed and met your deadlines. So it's easy for you to take off. When did your newspaper willingly give up $500,000 or $1 million? When? No, never, and it will never happen either. What a nerve. Now, I have a charity tournament. We've already sent 134 kids through college that I coordinate with Bob Hope's tournament. Bob plays in my tournament, so does President Ford, so does Speaker O'Neill, so does Chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, Dan Rostenkowski, and I'm darn proud of that tournament. And on the day the tournament ends, it's the day before the Hope tournament begins, I run a big party for everybody. And who showed up at the party this year partaking of the free food and drink? Sports writers, whom I don't particularly care for and didn't invite. But they're there. They're always there. Will they have to pay for the Super Bowl seats that they sit in? No. But my company, ABC, has to pay millions of dollars. It's time for you, the American public, to know the truth. What an easy thing to cheap shot my medium. I don't care whether it's CBS, NBC, or ABC. Get off your high horses. When Moses spoke from the mount and issued the Ten Commandments, not one of those commandments ever said, "The prince shall reign over all." They're the only ones who matter. Indeed, if he opened the Red Sea, he didn't do it for the sake of the sports writers. And you know what? In one of the disgraceful things surrounding the Super Bowl hype, this Friday night, Alvin, Pete Rozelle, and the National Football League will run a $500,000 party for the sports writers of this country while they see the game for free. What a disgrace for them to open their mouths. Back in 30 seconds.
Rich Little for Hormel Chili.
Where were you in the evening of the 17th?
In the kitchen.
Making the alleged homemade chili, I presume?
Objection!
Overruled.
Yes, I...
Are you aware of the penalty for perjury?
Okay.
So it was Hormel, with the plump beans, rich tomatoes, lean ground beef, and secret spices of homemade?
Yes, but what's the difference?
5 to 10 in the slammer.
Hormel chili, so close to homemade it just might get you into trouble.
Telling it like it is, this is Howard Cosell.
A real rodeo lover doesn't settle for any cow burger. They eat the best. The best being Ronnie's Buffalo Burgers. Thank you, son. Come on down to Ronnie's and they'll fix you up with a delicious Buffalo Burger. Now, Ronnie's Buffalo Burgers are the best in the West because they got more taste and more protein and less fat and less calories than those other cow critters. Thank you, son. So mosey on over to Sunshine Square where the boulevard and the bluff trails meet and get your crew a Ronnie's Buffalo Burger. It's real good cowboy grub. Thank you, son.
Hi, I'm Lisa Haynes.
And I'm Carrie Haynes. And our dad, Lou Haynes from Taco Time, is having a birthday.
He's going to be old.
He's going to be really old.
He's going to be 40.
Ancient.
So come into Taco Time today
and wish poor old dad a happy birthday.
There are going to be balloons for the kids.
And cake.
Bring your coupons, save money, and help celebrate.
That's at Taco Time, corner of St. George Boulevard and Taco Time.
Home of the big orange cactus.
Lisa, how old is 40?
It's way over the hill.
Is that why Dad can't do the yard work?
Two extensive searches ended Monday as both Dixie College and Dixie High School named new head basketball coaches. For the Rebels, the new man is Ken Wagner, who spent last season as an assistant coach at BYU Hawaii. The Flyers tabbed Bill Brown, who coached North Summit High School, to the state Class 1A title. Dixie College President Alton Wade noted that Wagner's credentials are impressive.
I don't know that anyone that we spoke to had any negative to say about this young man. Both his tactical basketball ability, his on and off the court demeanor, his relationship with young men. Some of the quotes were that he is one of the finest men builders that we've ever been around.
The former head coach at Lehigh High School promised exciting basketball for the Dixie College fans.
I really believe in a fast-paced game. I think the players and the fans both really enjoy it. My teams have always been known for their hard, aggressive defensive play, and I feel that makes for a more exciting game. The tradition has been set at Dixie as far as goals, you know, winning the national championship. It's tough to do every year, but once you've tasted it, after you've tasted success, I think people kind of get used to it, and that's what you've had at Dixie College.
The new Dixie High School coach will provide an up-tempo game for the Flyer fans, according to Dixie principal Ross Taylor.
I think you'll see a
a fast-running ball game. I think you'll see his boys want to play very intensely in both offense and defense. He'll be the kind of a coach who will start his defense the minute the ball comes in bounds.
Brown also has experience as a football coach at the high school level. The new Flyer coach also carries impressive credentials.
So we feel like that Bill's the kind of a fellow who will take advantage of the talent and build it to the best of his ability. He's very personable. He's quiet. He's soft-spoken. He doesn't tend to become anxious or impatient. We feel like he has those qualities which put him in good stead with students and in good stead with parents.
Both coaches face a challenge following highly successful coaches. Larry Jewell reporting. An assistant coach at BYU Hawaii has been named to lead the Dixie College basketball squad this coming season. Ken Wagner, who spent five seasons as the head coach at Lehigh High School, will succeed Neil Roberts as coach of the national champion Dixie Rebels. According to athletic director Doug Allred, Wagner surfaced as the choice from an outstanding field of applicants.
Of the 27 or 28 candidates that officially made application, that he surfaced is our unanimous choice. I think that he's one of the very fine young coaches in the country today.
President Alton Wade echoed the positive impression of the new Dixie coach.
I don't know that anyone that we spoke to had any negative to say about this young man. Both his tactical basketball ability, his on and off the court demeanor, his relationship with young men. Some of the quotes were that he is one of the finest men builders that we've ever been around.
When contacted in Hawaii, the 31-year-old native of Mexico pledged an up-tempo style of basketball.
I really believe in a fast-paced game. I think the players and the fans both really enjoy it. My teams have always been known for their hard, aggressive defensive play, and I feel that makes for a more exciting game. The tradition has been set at Dixie as far as goals, you know, winning the national championship. It's tough to do every year, but once you've tasted it, after you've tasted success, I think people kind of get used to it, and that's what you've had at Dixie College.
The new Dixie coach was raised in Mexico City, but played freshman basketball at BYU. After a mission for the LDS Church, Wagner played football and basketball at Eastern Arizona before completing a bachelor's degree at BYU and a master's degree at the University of Utah. Meanwhile, the Washington County School District has named Bill Brown as the new coach at Dixie High School. The former football coach at Delta High comes from the head basketball coaching job at North Summit High. While at North Summit, the BYU grad led the school to the Class 1A state championship. Larry Jewell reporting. Salt Lake City runner Steve Travis breezed to victory Saturday morning in the ninth running of the St. George Marathon, and in the process recorded one of the fastest times in the history of the event. The final clocking was 2 hours, 18 minutes, 55.9 seconds. Travis battled Las Vegas runner Jeff Gardner for the lead early in the race, but took control before the halfway mark.
There's a long, gradual uphill grade around the 9, 10-mile mark. And I put a move in there and opened up some ground, and that was it.
Number two finisher Gardner was not surprised by the performance of Travis.
I knew it was going to be a good day for him because we were talking to the start of the race, and he seemed a little bit more comfortable than I did, especially after we'd run up that one mile uphill stretch. And I knew it was going to be a good day for him. I just hoped I could hang on for second, which unfortunately I did today.
On the female side, Southern Utah State College student Jolene Fisher broke the marathon record with a 2 hour, 43 minute, 27.4-second mark. The new mark fulfilled a goal for Fisher.
I was shooting for it. Honestly, I was. It's just good to have it over.
The wheelchair division provided the drama as Jim Peterson recaptured the St. George Marathon record with a 1 hour, 43 minute, 43 second mark in a head-to-head battle with Vance Anderson, who broke Peterson's record last year. Sharon Frenette of Salt Lake City established a new wheelchair record for women in spite of a blowout early in the race. Frenette raced most of the course without a functioning right front tire. Larry Jewell reporting. Time once again to take a moment with the marathon. This time, we'll talk with Jay Cooper, a veteran of the St. George Marathon. Now, once again, Jay will be running in the marathon. Why, after all these years, does he continue to run these things?
Well, I don't know. Shall we say it's just climbing the mountain one more time, I guess. It's more of a community involvement now, I think. I run it just because I don't want to be left out, I guess.
Now, if you pin him down, as part of his physical fitness program, running is the crux of the whole program. And, yes, Jay Cooper does enjoy distance running.
Very much so. It's a part of my life. Once a person has weighed 242 pounds and been down into the 150s, you just never want to go back.
Well, this year there may be a physical problem that will keep him out of the marathon, but it'll be probably the evening before he will know.
I'm nursing a little injury right now for the first time in my career, and I've been in consultation with the physicians downtown, and that I'm at a point right now where I don't know medically whether I'm going to be able to run this one or not. And I've been running for 12 years, and this is a first for me, so I don't really know how to act.
Now, just in case the injury is okay, what will be the goals out of the 1985 St. George Marathon?
Well, of course, I'd like to run under 3 hours, and I'd like to do so without hurting myself and come away from it all feeling like I'd certainly look forward to doing another one.
St. George Marathon veteran Jay Cooper. This Moment with the Marathon is a presentation of KGXU Sports. Join us Saturday morning for coverage of the 1985 St. George Marathon. I'm Larry Jewell. Time once again to take a moment with the marathon. One of the veterans of the St. George Marathon is a local runner, Jay Cooper. Now, Jay claims that running, and specifically marathon running, can be therapeutic.
Basically, you have to run slow enough and easy enough that you enjoy it and keep it in perspective. It is something that's good for your peace of mind and your physical conditioning, and I guess more than anything else, it's something for a person to get out and separate some of the innermost emotional feelings and just really feel like you are able to relieve some of the tensions that life has to offer to you.
After all of these marathons, is there any one moment that stands out in your mind?
Up there a couple of years ago, standing in the blizzard, with all of us standing up there under the tarps, stepping in mud holes, with it raining and sleeting, and it's about 30 degrees, and you're all just freezing to death, and we're huddled together like a bunch of sardines, and you have to wonder or not whether runners have any sense at all.
Of course, the up there is at the beginning of the race. At the junction there, as the road takes off to Central. Well, in spite of all of that, Jay Cooper recommends that any runner try a marathon.
There's a difference between marathoning and running. And marathoning is something that anybody that is a runner or aspires to be, or is even a weekend warrior, so to speak, should get out there and perhaps try it once. Marathoning something that you really should try, because it will add a new dimension to your self-worth and self-image and your ability to accomplish what you would maybe ascertain as an insurmountable feat, because running a marathon genuinely is not as difficult as it gets credit for being.
Well, it may seem strange, but according to Jay, the problem is not from the kneecaps down. It's from the Adam's apple up.
Any person in reasonable condition, and they can physically run a marathon. The reason people think they can't is because they think they can't. It's between your ears for the most part.
That's Jay Cooper, a veteran of the St. George Marathon. This Moment with the Marathon is a presentation of KDXU Sports. Join us Saturday morning for coverage of the 1985 St. George Marathon. I'm Larry Jewell. Time once again to take a moment with the marathon. In front of the runners, keeping them informed of how deep they are into a St. George Marathon, is the pace car. For the third consecutive year, Evan Stapley will be driving that car for the St. George Marathon. There are unique feelings being in front of those marathoners and watching the emotions.
Well, you know, I don't really think I've got the physical ability to run it, but you get wound up with the enthusiasm of watching all these runners start, watching their endurance going all the way through, and then watching them come down that finishing line toward the crowd at the finishing line. It's thrilling.
What about the most memorable part of the marathon in your experience?
Oh, I think last year was a lot of fun with Hawk Harper because we became involved with him. It was his clock that we were carrying on the van. And watching him come all the way through, watching him run, watching him take the lead, and then winning it. That was really quite a thrill last year because we knew him.
Now, there is such a thing as a wall. Marathon runners have all experienced it at one time or another. From the pace car, do you see the wall hit the runners?
Talk a lot about the 20-mile wall. We're watching most of the front runners. We do stop a couple of times and let the other runners see what times they're running, maybe like the first 20 runners. There's two spots where we do stop. But really, the front runners, when they hit that wall, they don't really experience the wall because they are in shape. So although we're at the front and can watch them, we don't really get to see them, the real people that have to get down and pull from down deep inside to finish those last 6 miles. They don't see that.
They don't see the front runners experience that. But even for the front runners, there are tough spots in the race, even if there is no wall.
Well, anybody that comes up that Vail Hill has to pull down inside of them to get the endurance to go up the hill. And then as you're dropping down into the Snow Canyon area, to the turnoff to Snow Canyon, I think that's difficult because it's some strain on your knees. Then the last drop off the hill coming down into St. George, those that I've talked to say that is very demanding.
That's Evan Stapley, the driver of the pace car in the St. George Marathon again this year. This Moment with the Marathon is a presentation of KDXU Sports. Join us Saturday morning for coverage of the 1985 St. George Marathon. I'm Larry Jewell. Time once again to take a moment with the marathon. Driving the pace car this year out in front of all of the runners will be Evan Stapley. This is the third straight year that Evan has spent time in that pace car. It actually gets tiring watching the runners while you ride.
It really makes you tired watching them run. It's hard to say that and not fair to them, but you do get caught up with it. You do feel the exhaustion. You feel the enthusiasm. Watching the changes, watching those come from behind, of course you don't feel the same exhaustion, but yet you can feel that you've really been through a marathon.
Now, the most dramatic race that Evan has been involved with was 2 years ago when Chad Bennion, speaking of coming from behind, came from behind.
He was kind of an unknown. He had registered late. He didn't have the high numbers. The better runners have the lower numbers. This young man came in with a number of something like 1,252. At one point in the race when we stopped, he asked us, who's ahead of me? And we told him, and one of the gentlemen in the van with us was one of the newspaper, or a running magazine, a reporter, and he told him who the runners were and how far they were ahead. And watching him come way down from way behind, and he came in and won the race.
Now, prior to going into the pace car, like many people who are involved with the marathon, but not really runners, Evan Stapley was involved with the Exchange Club at the finish line. The Exchange Club each year provides the catchers. Many people just collapse as they go across that finish line after 26 miles plus yardage. There was a most memorable moment in that experience.
Some people who had stopped and had actually picked up and helped a girl. Her knees had given out on her. She could no more finish that race than she could crawl. But yet they stopped, they picked her, you know, their arms up, helped her cross the finishing line to those of us waiting at the finishing line. And to me, that was really what some of these marathons are all about.
Evan Stapley, the driver of the pace car and one of the many volunteers helping with the St. George Marathon. This Moment with the Marathon is a presentation of KDXU Sports. Join us Saturday morning for coverage of the 1985 St. George Marathon. I'm Larry Jewell. Time once again to take a moment with the marathon. A set of twins has run the marathon two separate times. and their local twins, Daryl and Dale Larkin. But they will not be in this year's marathon. Dale will be out of town. Daryl will be involved with nursing an injury. Do they have similar injuries when they run?
No, but he always tries to run a little faster, and it seems like invariably he has a problem with the knee or so forth. But basically, neither of us have been injured very seriously.
Now, we're picking on Dale Larkin and asking him about his brother, Daryl, too. Now, both of them spent a lot of time on the golf course, which doesn't seem to bother their running.
Well, we don't try and let things like that interfere with golf. Never has. We've just enjoyed running either early in the morning or late at night. We've enjoyed that for several years.
Now they promise that they'll try to run it again next year.
We hope to next year, but that depends on what kind of shape we're in.
Is there one memory of the marathon that stands out in your mind, Dale?
Well, I think just finishing and the great feeling of having accomplished it, but otherwise, it's just a lot of work, and it seems like it'll never end before you get to the finish line.
Now, you would think twin brothers train together, right? Kind of.
Somewhat. He likes to run in the morning, I like to run at night, and so that makes a little difference. But we run together several times a week, at least.
Now, if you ask Dale Larkin, having run the marathon twice, whether he would recommend it to anyone else, you get a mixed reaction.
I suspect if someone wants to see if they can do it and just have the thrill of doing it, then I would recommend it. Otherwise, I think like a half marathon or a 10K is probably a smarter thing to train train for and run. I believe a marathon takes an awful lot out of a person. But it's sure a great experience to have, and it's certainly something to be able to say, I ran a marathon.
Yes, it is. The single biggest challenge of a marathon?
Just getting to the finish line.
And both Dale and Daryl found the wall.
Oh, yes. They all say there's a wall, and I said, no way, there's not a wall. But about 18, 20 miles, it sure was there. And once you got past that, then you just say, hey, let's see if we can get to the end. And we were able to in both cases. We both run twice, and that's really a great thing to have had happen in our lives. Hope to be able to do it again.
Dale Larkin, who with his twin brother Daryl have been veterans of the St. George Marathon. This Moment with a Marathon is a presentation of KDXU Sports. Join us Saturday morning for coverage of the 1985 St. George Marathon. I'm Larry Jewell. Time once again to take a moment with a marathon. Dr. Keith Reber specializes in podiatry. Obviously, he comes across many feet that are training or have participated in marathons. What's the most common injury problem that he sees?
Knee pain. That's by far the most common problem we see. And then second to that would be leg and foot pain.
Knee pain. Why knee pain?
About 70% of the problems is due to an over pronation or a flattening of the arch, an improper support of the foot, and as the arch collapses due to the forces going through it, it causes the leg to turn in and puts a strain on the knee, and the knee's not able to adapt to that stress.
Now, does he still find severe blistering taking place?
Well, we used to. I think with the with all the research and studying and going into the shoes that they've limited a lot of that problem. It continues to be a problem, especially if someone doesn't take care to find the proper shoe for their foot. But the more motion you get inside of a shoe, the more the foot moves around in the shoe, the more friction you're going to get, and the more blistering and calluses and things like that.
Now, if you're going to be a runner, or if you're going to participate in a marathon, there are four things that Dr. Reber recommends that you watch out for. First of all is training.
They need to be aware. They need to, the time of day that they train in. Somebody who runs in the evening isn't going to want to, and then thinks that they can get up all of a sudden the morning of the marathon, and then all of a sudden run it, will find that there's a big difference in the time that they run.
Now, what's the next item you watch out for?
Their diet, and you know, there's not enough that can be said about diet.
And then there's flexibility.
The more miles somebody puts on, the more they have to be concerned about maintaining flexibility. And that's why you see a lot of these serious runners will take a half hour before and after a run and do the stretching.
There is a reason for watching out for flexibility also.
You do the same thing over and over and over for hour after hour. And when you do that, those muscles start to swell up. And every time they work, they engorge themselves with blood. And, and someone can get muscle bound, or those muscles will tighten up considerably if they don't seriously work at maintaining flexibility.
Now, the final thing to watch out for is biomechanics, which is a fancy name for...
their form, how they're carrying their head, their body, their arms, how their feet are striking the ground, their stride. And the more they know about themselves and about the proper way to run, and the less likely they're going to have an injury.
St. George Dr. Keith Reber, specialty podiatry. This moment with the marathon is a presentation of KDXU Sports. Join us Saturday morning for coverage of the 1985 St. George Marathon. I'm Larry Jewell.
Dixie College successfully defended the championship of the Valley of the Sun tournament Friday night in Scottsdale, Arizona, with an 82-70 victory over a scrappy Phoenix College team. Dixie and Phoenix traded leads early in the ballgame before Dixie finally could take a 35-30 halftime margin. Phoenix brought the difference back to 1 point before Dixie was finally able to get a little daylight at the end of the ballgame and win 82-70. Earlier in the final day's action, Glendale took seventh place by defeating Scottsdale 72-60. The consolation championship went to Butler County with a 96-88 victory over College of Eastern Utah. Snow College downed Mesa Community College 85-78 for third place, and then it was Dixie 82, Phoenix 70. High scorer for Phoenix was Ron Aker, who had the hot hand with 17 second-half points and 23 total. For Dixie, Todd Crow led everyone with 23 points, while Byron Vitoy had a career-high 17, Josh Bergen had 14, and Lyndon DeYoung had a career-high 14 for the Rebels. Final score again Friday night, Dixie 82, Phoenix College 70. Larry Jewell reporting from Scottsdale, Arizona.
Henry Buchanan hit 8 straight free throws, and Tyrone Jones put in 15 second-half points to lead Hutchinson College to an 85-77 win over Dixie in the consolation championship of the third annual Rotary National Junior College Shootout. Dixie came from 10 points down to grab a 2-point lead, only to see Hutchinson again have a 10-point lead in the ball game late in the game. Dixie brought it back to within 2 coming down the wire, but free throws by Henry Buchanan under pressure, 8 straight of them in the closing seconds of the game, iced the victory for the Blue Dragons. For Hutchinson, the ball club now goes to 12-4 on the season, while Dixie drops to a 10-5 record. In the seventh place game earlier in the afternoon Saturday, New Mexico Military edged Taft College 94-93 as Taft's Darrell Gates just missed on a jump shot from beyond midcourt as the time ran out. That's how close the tournament has been. Once again, the final score with Hutchinson defeating Dixie 85-77. Tyrone Jones, leading scorer for Hutch with 29 points. Todd Crow led Dixie with 23. Larry Jewell reporting from Mesa Community College. Mike Gamble threw 5 touchdown passes, completed 20 of 27 passes for over 300 yards to lead the Dixie College Rebels to a 46-21 victory in the third annual Roaring Ranger Football Bowl game. The victory took place in the heart of Texas, Ranger, Texas, against Dodge City Community College out of the Jayhawk Conference. Dixie got bombs from Mike Gamble, 52 yards to Bryant Hill, 39 yards to Bryant Hill, and 97 yards to Anthony Savage to take a quick 18-0 lead before Dodge City could get on the scoreboard. Dodge City scoring 2 fourth-quarter touchdowns to bring it back to a 46-21 margin. With the victory, Dixie goes to 8-4 on the year, and their second bowl victory in 3 years of play under Coach Greg Crowshaw. Once again, Dixie victorious in the Roaring Ranger Bowl game. Mike Gamble named most valuable player for Dixie. Wide receiver Eddie Brown named most valuable player for Dodge City. Final score, once again, Dixie 46, Dodge City 21 in the Roaring Ranger Bowl. Larry Jewell reporting from Ranger, Texas.
Mr. President, Mr. President.
Yes, what is it?
It's the White House, sir.
Well, what about it?
It's being bugged, sir.
Invasion of the White House? Well, there's only one thing to do.
Call the CIA?
No, have Nancy call pesticide specialists to get the bugs out.
If your house is being bugged, call pesticide specialists, a member of the National and Utah Pest Control Associations, and recently inducted into the Who's Who in Pest Control. Call pesticide specialists at 628-4732 for a free estimate.
Strike two, sports fans. I'm your best friend, the umpire. Never mind that sore head. If you want to play ball, come to Rebel Sports. They'll suit up your whole baseball, softball, and little league teams. They have the latest uniforms and the state-of-the-art equipment, including top-of-the-line shoes, gloves, and bats. Strike three! Excuse me, while I run for my life, you run to Rebel Sports in the St. George Commercial Center. They'll suit up your team right.
Hello, Americans. I'm Paul Harvey. You know what the news is. In a minute, you're going to hear the rest of the story. Now, the rest of the story. Among the romantic traditions of the American Wild West, none is more attractive than the true saga of the Pony Express. Now, the Pony Express was not a mail route planned and operated by the government. It was a private enterprise. At a rate of $5 per half ounce, only the most urgent communication was so dispatched. The rest of the mail traveled by stagecoach. More than 200 riders were employed by the Pony Express, among them the now celebrated William Buffalo Bill Cody and James Wild Bill Hickok. You'd think meaner than a rattlesnake would have been the job description, and yet the firm distributed Bibles to all of its riders. Drinking and even swearing were fireable offenses. The Pony Express was a success in every way, except financially. The system operated for only 18 months, representing 308 runs both directions, 616,000 miles. And yet only light letters and telegrams could be delivered, not quite 35,000 pieces of mail during that year and a half. So the Pony Express made a hair over $90,000, which barely covered the initial cost of the horses alone. And thus a real-life legend went bust. But this is the rest of the story. Originally, the Pony Express was founded by a fellow named Cyrus. Now, lots of folks realized an expanding nation would need a faster postal service, but it was Cyrus who actually did something about it. He envisioned a series of stations strung out across the land, stopping points where fresh horses could be supplied. Also, a team of hard riders, men who could travel on horseback hundreds of miles a day without wearying. They would have to be jockey-sized fellows so the horses would not tire too quickly, and they must be fearless men, unconcerned about the many dangers they were likely to encounter en route. And such a breed of men was hired, and the Pony Express was born. How dangerous was it? Well, it became customary for riders to rewrite their wills, as in last will and testament, before each cross-country run. But they did their jobs well. Nothing travels faster than these horseback mailmen, one reporter wrote, and he added, neither snow, nor rain, nor heat, nor gloom of night stays these couriers from the swift completion of their appointed rounds. Those words, in slight variation, are carved into the stone facade of the General Post Office on 8th Avenue in New York City. They have become the motto of the Post Office of the United States, but they were first said in reference to the first Pony Express. To youngsters in the many towns along the way, the fast-riding messengers became heroes. The post road they traveled was a highway to adventures and places that few could ever hope to see. Well, now, those men and those days are gone, but in our minds, their adventures linger on. No one alive ever witnessed the birth of the Pony Express. But no American ever witnessed it either. For you see, the reporter who first said, neither snow nor rain nor heat nor gloom of night, was reporting a very long time ago. He was the Greek historian Herodotus. And Cyrus, the man who established the Pony Express, he was Cyrus the Great, a Persian king who had conquered so much real estate that he needed a more efficient postal system. And he created one, the first Pony Express, 5.5 centuries before the birth of Christ. And now you know the rest of the story.
Good Time 89 KDXU, and that's Barry Manilow. Speaking about good times, I have with me on the telephone Rick Ridgway. Right, Rick?
Right, huh?
Now, we've talked about, we've been talking over the last few days about what you do for a living. You go out and climb mountains and things like that.
Well, I go on adventures of all sorts, actually, and mountain climbing is probably the thing I do most commonly.
For people who want to meet Rick face-to-face, or I guess climber spike to climber spike or whatever, Rick's down at Outdoor Outlet this afternoon, and you'll be giving a slide presentation tonight at Dixie High School.
That's right, at 7 o'clock.
Now, what's involved with your presentation tonight?
Well, I call it 20 years of adventuring, Larry. I've been going on these sort of things, mountain climbing, river running, jungle exploring, and whatnot, for about that long. And over those years, I've put together a number of slideshows that I often present at places just like I'm speaking tonight. I decided recently to take the best slides, or at least slides that had the best stories attached to them from all my shows, and put them together in a single one-hour presentation, and that's what I have tonight.
It should be a lot of fun for people that like to dream about faraway places.
Yeah, there's a lot of fun stories, too.
Let's start with the most... probably one of the most commonly asked questions that you have. How did you get into adventuring?
Well, my interest goes all the way back to childhood, when I used to read magazine articles and books about people mountain climbing and river running and exploring in general. I never did anything about it other than a few backpack trips during the summer with my school chums, until I finished high school, and for a graduation present, my mother gave me a course to Outward Bound. Well, that really whetted my appetite. And in addition to learning a little bit, actually, about mountaineering, I just knew that that was for me. So that's what started it all off. And I think my mother still regrets having given that in some ways. But that's tongue-in-cheek on her part, too.
Do you remember the first mountain that you climbed?
Well, actually, when I was just in junior high school, I remember being on summer vacation with my pal and climbing a 10,000-foot mountain above the cabin where his parents had rented a place for the summer on this lake shore in California, and it was actually steep on the side. We climbed it so much so that we had to stand on one another's shoulders to reach handholds, and I still don't know how we managed to do it up and down in one piece without killing ourselves, but that was my first one, and boy, I was hooked. I really wanted to pursue it.
Don't you ever get dizzy on top of those things?
Well, you get acclimatized to it in a sense. Acclimatized in the sense you get used to exposure, as climbers call it, you know, the big gapping, yawning distance below you. And it's just like so many things in life. Once you do it for a while, it doesn't seem perhaps as terrifying as at the beginning.
What's the highest mountain that you've climbed?
Oh, I once managed to get to the top of a peak called K2, which is the second highest mountain in the world, 28,250 feet high.
28,000 feet up?
Yeah. That was in 1978.
Now, that's got to be in Tibet or someplace like that.
Yes, actually, it's in... it's in the Himalaya, in the very northwestern sector of that range, on the border between Pakistan and China, in a sub-range of the Himalaya called the Karakoram Mountains.
That's where they're supposed to find the Shangri-Las and all of that. Did you happen to stumble across one?
never found Shangri-La. I found places close to it, actually. Only last year, in the fall of 85, I was, for the first time, in the very western extreme of the Himalayas, in a country called, or in the eastern extreme, in a country called Bhutan. And after that was what my sixth trip to the Himalayas, and it was as close to Shangri-La as I had gotten. It was a marvelous country, a little kingdom the size of the state of Indiana, nestled way up in the mountains. Marvelous place.
Well, isolated from the rest of the world.
Yeah. It was indeed the king is a 25-year-old guy who used to come out every afternoon and challenge the town folks to a basketball game. And then when he got the ball, everyone else would wait until he shot
That's
the royal basket.
That is clout.
But it was Shangri-La. It was such a cute place.
Out of all of the goals that you've reached so far, which was the one that you wanted to reach more than any of them?
Well, again, I suppose that's that K2 climb. That was a very difficult ascent. We were on the mountain above 18,000 feet for 68 days. And we did manage to climb without oxygen, too, which made it even more difficult. And
holding your breath all that time.
Well, all things considered, that was the hardest of the high-altitude climbs that I've done. And so I suppose, to answer your question, the one that, when I look back on, feels like the biggest achievement, too.
What turned out to be the biggest surprise, pleasant surprise for you?
The biggest pleasant surprise on all these adventures?
Uh-huh.
Oh, gosh, let's see. I don't know that there's a single one that comes to mind, but... in 1983, I went to Antarctica to climb the highest mountain on that continent, and that's a trip that I describe in the show tonight as well. I think getting close to that mountain, approaching it in an old airplane that we chartered, a DC-3, flying only 700 miles from the South Pole, and seeing the sea of ice before us with these mountains rising out like islands in a frozen sea, was a surprise that has stayed with me. Just that vision and seeing what on is probably the closest on our Earth you can come to being on another planet, seeing that image stays with me. I think I would call that the most pleasant surprise.